From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Avast ye swabs, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm your captain and your cook, Long John Silver, says I. And joining me is landlubber from the outback, Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Ho, ho, ho. Is that right?
And a bottle of rum, says I.
Yeah. And three hoes for you. Thanks.
And another man from the leather lubber from the Colorado territory. Say hello, Mr. John Grace.
Shiver me timbers, everybody.
Shiver me timbers, says I.
That's the dumbest quote ever, shiver me timbers.
You know, I think it originated with this book.
Probably did.
Movie.
I think most pirate stuff originates from Treasure Island. I mean, this is the movie we're doing today, if you haven't figured out, based on my impersonation there, is Treasure Island. And I think, you know.
Let them know which one it is. It's not the one you can get everywhere. It's the one you can't get anywhere.
Right.
because, you know, Honda. That's why.
Just so you guys know, we're doing a Treasure Island movie, which is the Frazier Clark Heston directed version from 1990, starring Charlton Heston, along with as Long John Silver, with Christian Bale as Young Arkins, Jim Arkins. You've also got Christopher Lee as Blind Pew, Oliver Reed as Billy Bones, Pete Postlethwaite as George Merry. Julian Glover is Dr. Livesley, so you've got quite a cast there. But, like, Treasure Island is the tome of piracy. And as one of my friends, David Bates, pointed out to me, National Talk Like a Pirate Day is National Talk Like Robert Newton from the 1950 Treasure Island Day.
Yeah, it's pretty much a quote a Robert Louis Stevenson book, specifically Treasure Island.
Okay, yeah. I've never heard of this practice. Why?
The National Talk Like a Pirate Day? That's like
It's Americans and their memes.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. It's pretty old. It's an old meme.
I'm glad I live over here. Seriously.
It kind of spawned out of the Disney Pirates of the Caribbean, like that connected with the youth, and then they started all this pirate silliness.
Worst pirate joke ever. Why are pirates horrible?
Why?
Because they are.
Oh.
Well, that's not as bad as what was that new pirate movie rated? It was rated R.
That's shit as well.
But you know, John, you've always recommended the Frazier Heston Treasure Island to me, and I got it on DVD a while ago, and I never watched it.
Yeah,
and you know, it'd been sitting on my shelf, and I kind of, when we were deciding on movies, I went, okay, I'm going to put this on the list because I want an excuse to watch it. But the 1950 Walt Disney Treasure Island, you know, was, when I was a kid, that was one of my all time favorite, like, most watched movies.
Uh-huh.
You know, probably easily the most watched Disney movie I watched. And you know, I, when it came to Treasure Island, the N.C. Wyeth paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Were also a massive part of my childhood. You know, when it came to iconic novels like Robin Hood, Treasure Island, Last of the Mohicans, the N.C. Wyeth paintings just defined the look of those for me.
Yeah, and I need to get some editions of those for the shelf that have the illustrations.
Yeah, I had those. My dad had them. And, like, he had editions with the paintings in them, like in glossy pages,
right,
along the text. And it brought those books to life.
Yeah, and that's the way the early 20th century editions were usually published, because they had the real classic illustrations with them.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of the Wyeth family. But N.C. Wyeth, to me, was a great illustrator. And one thing that I thought this movie, the Frasier Heston one that we're talking about, did really well was I thought, you know, visually it was very inspired by the Wyeth paintings, the way Michael Mann's Last of the Mohicans was.
Yeah. And it was made before Last of the Mohicans, I should add.
Yes. Yes, it was. This was 1990. But I was watching it. There's that scene where Hawkins goes back to the ship and those two men are fighting on the in the cabin.
Right.
The drunken fight. There's a painting of that in the Wyeth book, and it looks just like it. And the scene where Blind Pew dies, where he's abandoned by his men and he's run down by the horses, that's also – Wyeth did a painting of that, and it's very inspired by that. And just the look of this movie – It really borrows from the Wyeth paintings. I thought that's a way Heston sort of differentiates his movie from the Disney one. And the Disney one is a hard movie to distinguish yourself from because it's so iconic. You know, Robert Newton's performance is so iconic, and even Heston as Long John Silver, his performance is very informed by it. He is kind of doing a bit his take on the Robert Newton character,
right?
Which is you know, I think he's doing it a little grittier. He's a little nastier
because he can, because that wouldn't have been allowed in the Disney version in 1950 or whenever.
But it's informed by Robert Newton, but it's, you know, it's definitely a Charlton Heston performance. Anyway, I don't know. Treasure Island's a story that's very beloved to me. To me, you know, I talked a lot about boys' adventure movies, and I think Treasure Island is kind of the quintessential boys' adventure movie. You have your sort of swashbuckling characters, but you also have the boy character that watches everything that you sort of identify with in Jim Harkins, played by Christian Bale in this movie. Very young Christian Bale. Stuart,
yes.
What's been your past with this story?
Never seen it, never read it.
So you're completely unfamiliar with it?
Completely. All I know was it existed. That was it.
Well, this should be interesting then. The story is basically a tavern boy, Jim Hawkins, a guy named Billy Bones, played by Oliver Reed, comes in and is sort of takes up residence at their bar, at their tavern. And
as Oliver Reed was known to do in real life.
It's basically Oliver Reed.
Yeah.
When he's dying and he's like, I just rub, you're going.
That's how he went behind the scenes of Gladiator. He was arm wrestling some Greek sailors or something at a bar.
But, you know, these pirates come looking for him. He seems like he's waiting for someone to come looking for him. And Hawkins discovers he has a treasure map and takes it to the local magistrates. And they set out to go find a ship. But the magistrate has a big mouth, and he gets help from a guy named Long John Silver, who may or may not have nefarious aims, may or may not have connections to the pirates. And it turns into this kind of mutinous power struggle on the way to this island to find this buried treasure. And with Jim Hawkins as kind of the young boy in the center. And, you know, Robert Louis Stevenson wrote other stories kind of like this, like Kidnapped was a favorite. And, you know, he's also known for stuff like Jekyll and Hyde, but great Scottish writer. Kind of one of the, I think, defining Anglo boys novel writers. But what were some initial thoughts you had when watching this, Stu?
It's a long movie. I thought that.
It's over 2 hours.
Yeah. I thought, great, Hunter. Thanks.
it played in a 3-hour slot on TNT. Network, which is what it was produced for, so that's why it's
pretty big, gory for a TV movie. When I was watching it, I was going, this is pretty grotesque, you know.
Yeah
I really did enjoy it, I'll give that much. I had no idea what to expect from it, except some fabled pirate tale, and sat down, and yeah, pretty action packed. I'll give you that much.
Yeah, it was gritty and violent. It's almost like Sam Peckinpah's Treasure Island.
Yeah,
yeah.
I enjoyed Charlton Heston quite a bit. Fault him.
Long John Silver is such a fun character. He's the cook. He's there to prepare the meals, but he's also sort of this puppet master character. And it's kind of funny. You find out more about him, like when you meet Ben Gunn. He's like, you know, the map, the legendary pirate treasure they're going after is a guy named Flint, Captain Flint. But he's like, I was way more scared of Long John Silver than Captain Flint.
Yeah.
Ben Gunn, he's marooned there because, you know, Silver's just he's a guy who knows how to work everybody. You know, because the thing about the character is the center, the relationship at the center of the film is the relationship between Long John Silver and Jim Hawkins. Jim Hawkins is a very honest, responsible boy. He's kind of the model that young boys are supposed to follow. But it's hard not to like Long John Silver. And Long John Silver will do things and help Jim Hawkins, but he's also nefarious. He's also evil. And he's serving his own ends, and he knows how to manipulate an honest person like Jim Hawkins to get what he wants.
Yep.
But yeah, so, you know, when you saw Heston's performance, did you kind of see a quintessential pirate there that you'd sort of seen before?
Yeah, but that voice, it's too hard to escape Planet of the Apes. That's why. And it's like, yeah.
Yes, well, he is Charlton Heston.
Yeah, it is.
Just a little more piratey.
Yeah, it was. I did wonder what it would be like if Christopher Lee had been the pirate, being such a big guy.
Yeah, Lee plays Blind Pew, and he almost is like a Hammer horror villain. it's Frankenstein monster when his blind... When the scarf gets pulled off his face.
I think that was expected of him by that time. It's like, just do everything Hammer style because that's what they want. Because he's made that many of them.
Yeah, it was kind of a reunion of the Three Musketeers cast. Because Heston and Oliver Reed and Christopher Lee were all in the Lester Three Musketeer movies.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So that's kind of how I read it, like with those guys being on there.
Yeah, haven't seen that one either.
If
it's an old tale, apart from The Time Machine, War of the Worlds, and The Invisible Man, I haven't seen them, most likely.
Really? Well, we need to do more of those then.
Yeah, I didn't say I want to, I just haven't read them. That's like, we'll see.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. It'd have to be a good one. Oh, actually, hang on, what about Three Musketeers? No. Man in the Iron Mask, is that an old story, or is that just a film?
Alexandre Dumas, yeah, he's the guy who wrote Three Musketeers.
I have seen that as well. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. What's the one?
I saw the one with DiCaprio, and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I saw that, and I saw the one is it Richard Chamberlain?
Yeah.
Did he do one?
I think so.
Count of Monte Cristo for TV, and that's regarded as a pretty good version of that story.
Yeah, I saw an earlier version of The Man in the Iron Mask and really enjoyed it quite a bit.
There's probably been several versions of all of them. So,
well, the Count of Monte Cristo, didn't the guy who did Waterworld and
Kevin Reynolds. He did
Kevin Reynolds. That's right. He did a Count of Monte Cristo.
He did with the Jesus guy, Caviezel.
That was his
debut. I think it was his first lead role, like before Passion of Christ.
Reynolds, who also did a Jesus movie, Risen.
Did he?
Yeah, he did a movie called Risen that was okay. It's got Joseph Fiennes, and it's about a Roman centurion hunting Jesus after he disappears from his tomb. So it's sort of about the centurion character.
He's got 24 hours to bring in Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. And then he finds out
two moons to bring in Jesus.
He finds out Christ is risen, and of course he has a conversion experience. But But it's one of those movies that is really good until you meet Jesus, and Cliff Curtis plays Jesus, and he's not a very good Jesus. So it kind of ruins the rest of the movie.
Yeah, a lot of that is really based on the charisma of the actor playing Jesus.
Cliff Curtis, who I think is a good actor, right for Jesus.
Not a Jesus, basically.
He's not Jim Caviezel, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Christopher Lee kind of dominates the first act of the movie. He plays Blind Pew, the leader of the pirates looking for Billy Bones. And I thought he was really scary. In the Disney version, Blind Pew has one scene. He slips the black spot, and that's it. You don't get all the other stuff with him where he and his men attack the tavern. Because I remember the Disney version kind of glosses over that. It sort of is wanting you to get on the high seas as fast as possible. But I thought the stuff in the tavern, like with Christopher Lee, I thought it was pretty good. It was like a horror movie. It was scary. You know?
It was kind of like Hammer Films presents Treasure Island. It was pretty close to that, especially with Oliver Reed and Christopher Lee in it. So.
And they shot a lot of it at Pinewood Studios too. They used the ship from Mutiny on the Bounty with Brando.
Yeah, that's because Ted Turner owned that.
Yeah.
And when Heston sold him the project, Ted Turner was like, "Hey, you know, I own the ship from Mutiny on the Bounty. It's docked in the Florida Keys. You guys can use it." So it's like they're probably saving him about $10 million right there in the budget.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got this period correct ship that audiences will buy right there.
Right.
By the way, speaking of Mutiny on the Bounty, I recently purchased a Blu-ray of a movie called The Bounty with Anthony Hopkins and Mel Gibson.
That was the remake.
You know that one?
Yeah, that was, I remember.
Yeah, that was another. I saw that at the store, and I was like, Mel Gibson, Anthony Hopkins, The Bounty, sold.
It was not a hit. It played on cable a lot, but it was not a hit movie.
Well, I would imagine. I've never heard of it. You know?
Right.
I was going, like, Kena Lorber, they put out all these movies that are pretty obscure that I've never heard of that, you know, weren't really hits but are pretty good.
Yeah, they're putting out what the studios don't want to bother with for catalog releases.
Right, right.
Like, seriously, studios have gotten where they will not release anything on DVD that's old unless it was like a Star Wars or Goodfellas or something that just has that residual sales in any format.
They just license them off to Criterion, to Kino Lorber, to Olive Films is kind of one of these studio labels that just puts stuff out.
Yeah.
But Kino Lorber, though, they put out some really great obscure Westerns. I just got one called El Paso. And I got it because it has Gail Russell.
They're putting out some good stuff. They put out the Donovan Pied Piper movie. Dark, grim, like grotesque version of the Pied Piper with Donovan as the lead.
Nice. I got this one called El Paso, and I got it because it has Gail Russell, who's one of the few actresses that I will I will watch a movie with her in it because, you know, she's, I think, just glamorous and gorgeous. And her life story, her life was so brief and sad, too. It kind of has that kind of quality to it. But John Wayne was kind of, you know, gave her a lot of work in serials and stuff like that.
Right.
But I just saw it at the store. I was like, Gail Russell sold. And it had started. I thought it said John Wayne starring, but it was John Payne. Oops.
Oh.
Well, it's got Sterling.
You fell for it.
Well. I mean, to be fair, I noticed that before I bought it, but it also has Sterling Hayden, and Sterling Hayden's the man. You know,
great actor, terrific actor.
Very true.
But Treasure Island. I'm very taken aback because this is a story that's very familiar to me and John, and Stu's never seen or heard this story, so I'm sort of like wanting to know a little more about what you thought of it. What were some other things that struck you about it?
Well, it's a pirate story. It's not much you can really say, is there?
Well, it's kind of the pirate story, so
let's say the pirate story. But yeah, it's just a it's a pirate story, and there's shit going on. It's like I just watched it, and that was it. It's I think I haven't watched these sorts of things. I just don't think I have an interest in them at all.
Really,
and that's just me. Yeah, I just not to say these are bad, because it wasn't a bad movie. Like I said, I did enjoy it, but I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would. But I just think all these sorts of tales are just if I haven't sought them out by my age now, that I really haven't done, unless I have to, like I have to do for the show. But
yeah, I definitely have a fondness for this because I love the book. I love the movie, the Disney movie, when I was a kid.
It seems very American as well, even though written by a Scotsman, you said. Just the story feels very American. That's all, pirates and shit.
Pirates and adventure and, striking out.
Yeah, that's all. It was weird seeing Christian Bale, I'll say that much, at a young age. You're almost expecting to, break out into some sort of, why are you trying to kill me? But
yeah, this was before Newsies, even. This was this before or after Empire of the Sun?
It was after Empire of the Sun.
Yeah, that was 89, yeah, I think. 88, 89 or something.
Yeah.
Because, that was his big...
And he's younger in that film, too, so...
Yeah, I haven't even seen that one either.
He's in Empire of the Sun, then Henry V...
Newsies. Oh, I've seen. Is that the Branagh one? Henry V?
Yeah,
I've seen that. Yeah. Oh, he's in that. Okay, I forgot. I didn't.
Yeah, he plays Falstaff's boy.
Oh, okay.
So he's in that. Then he was in that, and then this, and then Newsies.
Yeah, he grew up in the industry. He's pretty much a child actor turned top adult actor. So
pretty much. One of those rare cases of a child actor who became a successful adult actor.
And didn't become dead as well.
Didn't become Corey Feldman,
So far. So.
Well, yeah, he's still in one place.
So far, I don't know. He's like dedicating his performance advice to Satan and stuff like that. So I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, boy. Okay.
He's going to play Ford versus Ferrari movie.
He's going to do a what? Ford versus Ferrari? What the fuck's that?
I guess it's a movie about cars.
Well, yeah, obviously I worked that out, brain drain, but I'm just saying, how the hell can you do a Ford versus Ferrari movie?
Are they still trying to make these car industry films? Like, Tucker flopping wasn't enough for them?
Tucker, Ted, listen, Francis Ford Coppola is a genius. Sir, all right.
Probably a fine film, but it's just like, what's the commercial prospects,
Yeah.
It's like, you have to be a car person to really dig that thing.
Yeah, it's funny. The car person is such an intense person that you would think that there are more of them than there are, because when you meet one, they're so passionate about that.
Yeah.
That over here was Ford versus Holden. That was the biggest argument. Oh, it was. It was a real thing. It's like, I'm a Ford man. No, I'm a Holden man. It's like, whatever. I'm a car that's got four wheels and runs, traitor? Man. Hey?
Were you a traitor if you were a Ford man?
Oh, you either one or the other. If you went from Ford to Holden, you're like publicly executed in the, on television. It was just,
A Holden is a Australian car, right?
Yes.
I mean, is that...
Yes.
So, like, a Ford is an American car, so if you were a Ford person, were you a traitor to the Australian people?
You were seen as that way, to a certain degree. Yeah, you were, if you were Australian, it was all about Holden, but, I personally think Holdens are better than Fords, to be honest with you. They just run better. I had a Ford...
Fords today are not like,
Oh, I had a 92 EB Ford, and it was a complete freaking lemon. It was just one problem after the other. I'm driving a Holden now at work, and runs like a dream. Not a problem at all.
Well, no, my first car was a Ford Explorer Sport, and I loved it, but when it died hard. Like, it was not fixable.
Yeah. You know? Same with mine. Mine was just one.
The transmission went out. If your transmission goes out, you know.
Yeah, bye-bye, baby. That's it. It's pretty much all over.
Just buy a new car.
Yeah. Mine was the engine block just overheating all the time. I'm like, what are you doing? Fix the freaking motor. Yeah, fix the engine block. Oh, yeah, we've done this. We'll put some more heat sinkers in. Didn't fix shit. You look at that thing and you think, oh, yep, be able to cook some bacon and eggs in this thing shortly. It'll take get running that hot.
If only they'd kept Uncle Henry's policies, none of that would have happened, you know. Kept the unions out, you know.
Yeah, I'll keep quiet about the unions.
That was deliberate trolling on my part. Anyway, so, John, you recommended this version to me. You were always telling me, oh, you got to watch the Charlton Heston Treasure Island. You got to watch it. You got to watch it.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I know you like it. But where'd you first see it? What was your sort of reaction to it? How do you compare it to the Disney one, et cetera?
Well, I wanted to see it because I'd read Charlton Heston's autobiography, and he was really proud of it. And he talked about the making of it and everything. And so I just I downloaded a torrent because I don't know if the disc was overpriced at that time or whatever, but I was like, wow, it's probably a crappy looking disc or something. So, you know, it's just
just the fact John blatantly came out and said, yeah, I just downloaded a torrent.
Well, I mean, the torrent was out there, so I got it. Strangely, the torrent is 185, like widescreen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's strange, which I don't know if it was filmed that way, maybe for foreign markets or something. I have not seen the Warner Brothers DVD. I don't know if Hunter could remember if it was full frame or wide.
I think it was widescreen because I don't remember watching it going, ew, it's full frame, you know.
Yeah. So it's because it was shot for TV, but maybe they wanted people to forget that. But I noticed Warner Brothers is going back and they're reformatting stuff that was filmed or broadcasted full frame, like the Kung Fu TV show, and they're redoing them at 185 widescreen. It's really weird.
Unless they're initially shot like that and just cropped for television.
It could, yeah, you know, I don't think they were. That's the thing. I think frame with like safe space, top and bottom. That's safe dead space that it can crop the top of heads or whatever, but it doesn't minimize any information. It's a weird way they do it.
Well, I remember I was a big fan growing up of the show Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
And
I remember that stupid movie we watched. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the show was, you know, it was a TV show. It was full frame, right? And they put the DVDs out. You know, you'd get a DVD for $20 and it'd be like three episodes, which if you've watched Dragon Ball Z, you know that barely anything happens in three episodes, you know, 20 minutes each. And, you know, hardly anything happens because it's the slowest show in the world, unless you watch the Dragon Ball Z Kai or something where it really puts it on at a clip. But I remember when they released like season sets of Dragon Ball Z and everybody was going, yes, finally I can pay a little money and get a lot of episodes. Well, one thing they did that ruined it was they put it in widescreen. And when they put it in widescreen, they cropped a ton of the image because it was never meant to be shown in widescreen. And so these were heavily cropped versions of the show. And so, of course, fans were really pissed about that. So, you know, I remember when I was – you know, when DVD was a thing, you'd have your full screen and widescreen versions. And so the full screen version was usually the cropped version. Right. But there was this other version of cropping, which was we're going to take something shot in full frame and we'll make it into widescreen and crop it, which was what happened with the Dragon Ball Z sets that they put out on DVD.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of those things where you go, was it shot this way? Because I always watched it in full frame, you know.
Well, I think with Treasure Island, they may have shot it, with a 185 friendly format because it's very likely they were going to sell it to other territories as a movie to show in theaters. Whereas it's not, obviously, it's just going to be a TV premiere in America.
It was
It felt like a theatrical film when I watched it on DVD recently, and I think it was wide because if it was full frame, usually I go, is this supposed to be full frame?
I've just been looking up some technical specs on it. Shot cinematographic process spherical, which I've just looked up because I didn't know the term, means shot 185, but friendly for 133 as well. So depending on depending on how they want to release it.
So it's like Super 35 is with scope and full frame movies.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. So you may find as well that those would you say the show was Kung Fu? They were redoing in aspect ratios.
Yeah. The HD streaming prints on Amazon Prime are all 185.
Okay, so and that may have been shot that way as well.
What I remember was Warner Brothers put out season one in widescreen, and everybody bitched about it, so seasons two and three were issued in full frame, like the old TV prints.
Right.
So, but the streaming prints on Amazon Prime are everything's wide, so this is. I think they shot it safe that way, and they probably used that process simply because it was not uncommon back in the 70s and even up to about 1990 to edit TV episodes together and market them as movies in third world countries or South America or Asia or wherever.
Kung Fu shot in 35mm spherical, so again, 185 squeezed in with 133 if you want.
Right.
So
it's
and that was 1972 to 75. So you may find that a lot of shows are like that. It's just that they'll. I guess that's why they put in the back of the box shown as original television aspect ratio, which is the 133 back then.
Yeah.
But if they want to, they can release it as that 185 without losing anything, without squeezing down and cropping, I should say.
Yeah, and like I just watched this a few hours ago, and I was stunned how much it seemed like a movie, especially with the action shots that were done all on location in Jamaica or wherever.
Well,
it's like it
I was watching
didn't look
it
like
going,
a TV thing.
I was watching it going, this does not feel like a TV movie to me, especially with the gore and stuff like that. Like,
well, Ted Turner's big objective for those TNT movies was sort of classic stories, but done with that updated cinema sensibility of 1989 and 1990. And they did Frankenstein, and they did a few other classic stuff.
Frankenstein was good. That was the one with Randy Quaid as the monster.
Yeah, I never saw it, but
yeah, it was good.
It was very faithful to the
the
novel.
Yeah,
and
it was
everything.
Better than the Coppola Branagh one. I've told English teachers at school, this is the, as far as Frankenstein movies go, this is the one that is probably the most faithful to the book.
Just a fun fact about Treasure Island. I just looked up. Manager Winston Humphrey was in this as well.
Oh, who was he in it?
It doesn't matter. He's incognito, so you don't need to know.
Yeah, you know.
He's an extra on the ship, you know, for the distant shots where they...
Well, there's that shot of that guy sleeping in the hammock. That was him. He said,
"Oh,
yeah,
yeah." Winston, you know, he's been in a lot of movies.
He is.
I do have the Christopher of Blood, which was Charlton Heston's follow-up project for TNT, where he played Sherlock Holmes, and Richard Johnson, who's also in Treasure Island, is Watson, and it's also directed by Frazier Heston.
Yeah, I was gonna say Frazier Heston directed that.
It should be called Nepotism Island. This film,
yeah.
Hey, but it's a good movie, so, you know.
Yeah, it's fun.
Can't really knock it. I was going to say, too, I think another one of those movies, John, that was kind of a Turner TNT type thing was Nick Rogue's Heart of Darkness.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that was shown. Everybody said that was a really good
version
of that story.
It's a good movie. I've got the Warner Archive release of it, and it's a pretty good version of that story. Straightforward version, you know, most people know Apocalypse Now, but it's a very direct adaptation of the Conrad novel.
Those projects were good, and everybody talks about these made for Netflix things. It's like, I don't think half of them were as well intended as this TNT prime
time. Warner Archive has put out a lot of those TNT ones from that era, and I've bought a lot of them, and I've gone, man, there's some really good made for TV movies that nobody talks about.
Yeah, because they were forgotten, because TNT quit airing them, like, I think probably late 90s when it suddenly just became, I don't know what they, maybe they're doing original detective shows or something, I don't know. I haven't had cable in years, so I don't even know what they show on TNT these days, other than NBA basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, Stuart, what did you think of, what did you think of, I'm trying to word my thing here. What did you think of it overall? I mean, you haven't really said what you really thought of it. You've sort of been kind of cagey about it. What do you think?
Numerous times I said I really enjoyed it. You're not listening.
Well, I mean, you said you enjoyed it, but you've been kind of like, you know, it's all right. I don't know. I didn't know.
Well, it's because it's a new tale to me of an old tale. So, yourself and John are much more familiar with it, so you know what to expect out of it. Me, I was just trying to take in this 130-something minute movie and go, oh, this happened, this happened, this happened, whereas you guys knew what was coming next.
Yeah.
So, I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you, it looks great. It really well shot. Love the scenery. Really well shot film. Enjoyed the actors in it. Oliver Reed, you know, probably drunk as a skunk on the set, but, you know, he was great. probably eating his oranges. You know the story, John Deere?
No. He's the definitive Billy Bones in this, though.
Yeah. Is it Oliver Reed or Keith Moon? I think Keith Moon was in Rehab. Or Oliver Reed was in Rehab. One or the other was in Rehab, and the other one would go into the Alcoholics Anonymous place where they're at and bring him fruit, but the fruit was injected with vodka in it, so they get smashed. So Keith Moon would roll up and go, just got these oranges. He's got a dozen oranges. And Oliver Reed would rip them open and just start eating them furiously because they're all injected with vodka. So tell you what, these alcoholics, they're inventive, that's for sure. That's like, I remember seeing Jamie Oliver, the British chef, the very famous one, talk about this party trick he had where he would inject vodka into a full watermelon and leave it sit for about 3 or 4 days. And I reckon people would take one or two pieces of watermelon and just be completely hammered. And I thought, well, you know, if you want to sneak some fruit into the sporting event and they can't say, well, this is liquid, this is booze, you can't take this, just do it for... Not that I advocate this sort of stuff, mind you. I don't drink or take alcohol at all, but, you know, I'm just saying what people do out there.
It's a strategy.
Yeah.
I will say,
just get back to what you asked. I really enjoyed the look of the film. The swashbuckling tale and all sort of stuff. Yeah, like I said, I don't really know if it's for me, but if I enjoy a film that I'm really not enthusiastic about, it's surpassed my expectations, that's for sure.
Well, you said it's a story that John and I are familiar with.
Well, I would imagine so, because, I mean, it was sort of stuff that you would have, I don't know, if you read back in school. Because we didn't read this sort of stuff at school in my time, so.
Well, I didn't read it in school either. I mean, it was something that, you know, I was interested in on my own, because I saw the Disney film. Right. And one thing I wanted to say was that I was a big fan of the book, and the Disney film to me was a good abridged version of the book. Right. But there was a lot of stuff in the book that was not in the Disney film that was in this movie.
How big's the original story of this page-wise? Like a rough figure? Couple of hundred, 400? I don't know how big this thing is.
It's like 160, 80 pages or something.
It's like a novella then, pretty much.
Yeah, almost. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a massive time investment.
Yeah, it's like the length of a Doc Savage or Tarzan novel. Just not a big thing. This is back when they didn't, when they were writing escapist stuff like this for boys, they didn't make it like War and Peace.
Yeah, like Robert Louis Stevenson's books are not very long. Like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde is a pretty short book. You know, this is a pretty short book. You know, it's it's not very long, but you know, you can turn it into a longer film just based on the action and
well, that's
the various things that happen.
If you, I've read The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, and that's not a very long story at all. It's just a, I don't know, I suppose 50-something pages, I think. It's not very
that's
long at all.
Pretty short. You can collect H.G. Wells's work into a, you know, all of them into a, you know, just a fat tome that would be the length of a Stephen King novel.
Yeah,
you know?
Basically.
Yeah.
But
same with Jack London, same with a lot of writers from that era.
That's like people, you know, may think that the Thing from Another World, the was it Campbell? What's his name?
Yeah, John W. Campbell.
Yeah.
Who goes there?
Yeah, Who Goes There? That was it. Yeah, that's not a very long story as well. I've read that one. I thought, oh,
it's a short
story. It's like 60 pages, I think.
It's nothing. Yeah, exactly. It's nothing. But, yeah, I mean, I tell you what, you get a lot more enjoyment reading those stories. You would do something that's 600 pages and just goes on and on and on. You think, oh, fuck. Don't need to over-accentuate every little bit of detail in the book. Just get to the buddy.
Yeah, I think for escapist stuff, under 200 pages is always preferable.
Like Rock said, Dime Boris, get to the chorus.
Yeah.
And I think with books, it's kind of a forgotten thing, because like, these Harry Potter novels, I guess, are hitting Tolstoy length or
well,
whatever.
They started out short, and then when you got to like Goblet of Fire, they tripled in length, and they just got longer and longer. You know.
Yeah, do people know there's alternatives or shorter books out there?
You know, if you're gonna have a book, you may as well triple the size of it, and you can ask more money for it. Because look, hey, it's 800 pages, so you're getting your money's worth for this thing. So
right, Devin Murphy had mentioned one time when I was talking to him about the length of the Destroyers in the 70s compared to what they were like in the 90s, and he said that the cost of the publishing and printing, it's like it's more profitable to have a thick book with too many pages than to have a lean one, like, you know, like an old Edgar Rice Burroughs or something.
Yeah, well, my book of The Invisible Man is a collected works thingy of H.G. Wells. He's got The Time Machine in there, and one might have War of the Worlds as well. I can't remember. I know Time Machine's definitely there as well. So, yeah.
And Food of the Gods and First Men on the Moon.
No, not Food of the Gods. Or that horrible Marjo movie from 1974 or what it was. About the giant rats, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was Food of the Gods, yeah. Yeah. Bird Eye Gordon, Mr. Big.
Yeah. So, but actually, when you did mention about Treasure Island, I did think you were talking about the one, the Disney one from 1950 or 51, wherever it is.
Yeah. It's the most famous one, for sure.
Yeah. But I do have that version as well, so I'm like, oh, I would like to see it.
You should watch it. It's. I mean, that was one of my favorite movies as a kid.
Yeah.
And I watched it over Thanksgiving at my grandmother's on VHS. You know, I pulled out the old VHS I watched when I was a kid, the same one, watched it, and had a blast watching it.
Hey, Hannah. Is that the grandma with the guns?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, yes. It's the only grandparent I have left.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't keep asking that question then. It makes it kind of redundant question. This is like, I just like asking the grandma with the guns a bit. It sounds
cool. Yeah. She's got an arsenal.
like a Charles Bronson Death Wish 3 type of arsenal.
Yeah, if the end came and there was the big war, I'd probably go there and, you know, stock up on ammo, you know. Probably go hole up for a while, you know, bring some water and
Did she shoot? Or was it your grandfather who did?
Oh, it was her. I mean, it was both of them, really. They were both, you know, pretty, but she's, you know, it's been her by herself for like 10 years now. And, always had a lot of guns, you know.
I'm not laughing. It's like, you know, Ted Nugent sort of artillery.
Oh, no, it definitely is. It's probably, you know, I'm sure Uncle Ted has more, but it's definitely like that type of situation.
Ted Nugent, I remember reading that interview or hearing that story with him. He goes, "You break into my house, you're going out in a Ziploc bag and a toe tag."
Yeah, when you're on a ranch, you don't really worry about home invasion. It's more like, you know, oh, there's a rattlesnake, let's kill it, you know.
Oh, really?
Or we're going hunting, let's kill, let's, you know, get a deer, you know, or something.
Do you ever see, I'm way off track, but I've got to ask this, and I can't be bothered asking after the show because I got to run. Do you ever see coyotes out that way, where she's at?
No, okay, they're out there, and I've seen dead ones. After they've been killed, but I've never actually seen one. But I hear them all over my house in Dallas.
Really?
Yes. Out in the suburbs. They will all howl outside my home, and it's so loud, and my dogs go nuts, and it's you know, it's kind of scary. But there have been a lot of news stories about coyotes attacking joggers, you know, in the morning and stuff, because they don't fear humans anymore, so nobody kills them.
Yeah, we have the signs around my neighborhood about coyotes, and I've seen one walking down the street one day, which I feared he was attracted because I had hens in the backyard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy, that would do it.
He jetted, but then when I saw Ted Nugent, like, that year in concert, he was saying, I heard Denver's got a coyote problem. He goes, shit, what the hell happened to this state? He goes, hell, where I am, coyotes got a Ted problem. You know, so. And it's because they quit allowing people to just kill them, and you know, you have to hire like a pest control squad to go out and basically shoot them.
And that's the thing is you'll have those problems. You call those people, and they go, okay, we can show up in a week. You know,
yeah, exactly. Oh, shit, by appointment only.
I remember. You know, one time there was a raccoon behind my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a raccoon that was out during the day, which means that it's diseased, you know.
Oh, really?
And okay. Oh, yeah. It means it's got like rabies or distemper or something.
Shit.
And you know, my parents' dog were going crazy. Max, especially, who's no longer with us, but he was very old. And could barely move, but you know, you knew he was triggered because he was hopping around and going nuts. And we called the city to take care of it, and they were like, yeah, we can come out in a few days. And we were like, so we can't shoot it, we can't do anything, we just have to have this diseased raccoon behind our house. You know, we just have to. And I think it died or something. I think it just died back there. But it was one of those things where we were going, wait, we can't, I mean, unless I go and like smash it with a shovel or something, I can't shoot it. I can't do it in a way that's humane or anything like that. So it was very frustrating. But, yeah. You know, but there's an abandoned train track behind my house. And so there's some train tracks, and there's a lot of packs of coyotes that live back there. So I hear them howling a lot, and sometimes you'll hear like tons of them howling at night.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool, actually. I like it.
That's like foxes. I see tons of foxes at work on the road, just freaking everywhere. Just, shit ton of them. So
I got to say, I do like foxes. I think they're pretty. I don't know. I've just always liked them.
I'm not scared.
Now when you gotta run them out of your backyard.
I'm sure they're a nuisance, and I know that they've been the inspiration for terrible Norwegian pop songs. But
old Kiss drummers.
I don't know. I've just always thought foxes were pretty creatures, even though I know they're probably a nuisance and annoying, but
they're a pest. Raccoons are a pest, all in this neighborhood too, where I live in. But funny thing is, I remember there was a weird incident. Like, okay, when you have hens, you buy them like bags of dried worms, and it's a kind of a costly snack treat for hens. And I had left the bag of worms outside overnight, not even thinking about it. And then I guess that morning, and I had this story described to me because I didn't remember it at all. But apparently a fat raccoon had grabbed the bag of worms and was eating it in the middle of the backyard. And, you know, he was there to basically kill our chickens, but they're protected in a hen house. So apparently I went out there in my pajamas and snatched the bag of worms away from the raccoon and yelled at it. And it was hissing at me, and then it finally, like, ran up a tree or something. But I don't even remember this story. But apparently it was a fat raccoon because they get into the
whiskey is the a human... heck of a drink. No, I'm kidding.
Apparently. Like, I don't remember this happening, but I believe it happened, but I went out there
John's all like, grouchy. Ah, it's a raccoon.
Yeah. Just, I went out there all grouchy, like Sam Elliott or something, and I just snatched the bag of worms and yelled at the raccoon and cursed it out, and it was like hissing back at me, and then it went over a fence, its fat ass going over a fence or something.
Just for the record, I just want to say we are actually talking about Treasure Island, not animals with Hal Linden, so...
Yeah, we should have saved this for Day of the Animals with Leslie Nielsen.
Or Dactari or something like that.
We could have done it on Black Stallion, but let's do one.
Yeah, the stories didn't come up. They just didn't come out of the subconscious there.
There's something about just the adventure of being out in the wild. As the Disney poster for Treasure Island says, the greatest adventure of all.
Yeah, exactly. It's the boys' adventure thing. I just don't have a story of firing like flintlock pistols or anything. So,
by the way, that was one thing. I was watching this movie, and Jim Hawkins is running through the water. And I was going, he's got those guns. Isn't he worried about his powder? And then later he tries to shoot someone and his guns don't go off. He's like,
it was consistent because, you know, Fraser and Charlton are gun guys. You know, so I couldn't know.
Well, because it was bugging me at the time, because I was thinking, well, I know Jim blows that guy's brains out later on in the movie. And I was thinking, well, he's obviously wetting his powder. I was like sitting there going, you know, is this going to come up later or is the movie just stupid? And then later, you know, turns out they actually know their stuff. Because he tries to shoot this guy. You're thinking, oh, here he goes. And then, oh, you didn't keep your powder dry, Jim.
Yeah, you've got two of Hollywood's probably top gun experts basically making that movie. So,
well, okay. You know what one of my gun pet peeves in movies is?
What's that?
Is when a dude pulls out a gun, he fires it, and then he finds out there's no bullets in it.
Yeah.
Anybody who's ever held a gun...
You know.
know if it has ammo in it or not.
Right.
I'm sorry, but, you know, like, James Bond in World is not enough. Like, James is not going to be fooled when a chick takes the gun out of it, the bullets out of his gun when he's sleeping with her. He's going to pick up that gun and go, hey, this feels different.
Yeah, the weight's a little off. It's that's like, I was reminded of, like, when they made Hard Target. John Woo's American debut. Chuck Farrar was the screenwriter for that movie, and he was a Navy SEAL. And so he said the one problem he had with John Woo's movies is he never showed anybody reloading their guns, and, you know, they're firing these pistols endlessly. And so that was one thing they made sure to show in Hard Target was the heroes and villains reloading their firearms. So
yeah,
that was a big note thing there. So it kind of helps when you have somebody with that experience on set.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't, so many Hollywood movies are written by liberals who've never shot a gun before, but you can always tell when a movie has a gun person in it, and this is definitely one of those movies, because Jim's running around in the water with his flintlock pistols, and you're sitting there going, okay, well, you know.
Yeah, your powder's
I hope, and this is probably gonna hurt you later, and then sure enough, it does.
Yeah.
Here's a fun fact. This film was known in Australia as Devil's Treasure.
Oh, interesting.
Mm.
Devil's Treasure.
So in Australia, like in your schools, do they not like teach like Robert Louis Stevenson as classic literature or whatever? Is it just a different standard?
I don't think they do that in America. You know?
I don't think they do either.
I didn't read this stuff when I was a kid. I mean, I got into this because of my dad.
Yeah, well, it was taught in my high school, but I went to a private Catholic school, so there's going to be a different standard. I don't think public schools bother.
Back when you were probably going to private Catholic schools taught this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Catholic schools are much more sort of, they're like Presbyterian schools were. Like,
yeah, it was going back to that classic liberal education that's completely eradicated.
Yeah, you know, you get the sort of classical education.
Yeah.
No, we read like Sparky the Space Chimp and stuff at school.
Well, you know, if you go to the schools in America, it's like you read, you know, it's got to be like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, God.
You know,
yep.
You might read Frankenstein. You might read some like vague, like classy horror stuff. But you're going to read a lot of stuff that has a social element to it.
Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies is one you will definitely read. Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah. We did read Time Machine in one of.
I've always said Fahrenheit 451 is probably the lamest of the dystopian novels.
Yeah.
You know, make kids read Brave New World. That's much more in line with the dystopia we are experiencing.
Yeah, I don't teach that anymore. That 1984 was taught in my Catholic high school, but not in any classes I took.
Well, you know, 1984 is one that we read in high school, and you know, we read Fahrenheit 451, but like 1984 is very 20th century style dystopia.
Yeah,
I think Brave New World is 21st century dystopia. It's, you know, hey, it's all voluntary. We're all taking drugs, and you know,
right?
We are right.
Pretty accurate.
We read in grade 4 the story of O. Remember that one?
Then you watch the movie version after you guys are done.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Good times.
Fanny Hill was taught in junior high.
We read Emmanuel as well.
Happy Hooker was an option.
Yeah, Happy Hooker.
Harold Robbins was, I think, on the syllabus.
Lots of Jackie Collins novels as well at school. I remember that.
Hollywood Wives.
Like, yeah, The Stud and all those ones. Hollywood Wives, yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up, yes?
All right, Stu, so what would you give Fraser Heston's Treasure Island?
I'm going to give it a 7. I actually really enjoyed it.
Solid rating.
Yes, and I do want to see for someone who was very, or absolutely unfamiliar with any part of this, I'd say it's pretty high for me. And I do want to see the 1951. I have got my...
You really should. It's only like 90 minutes. It's a lot shorter.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. That prime age of Disney live action in the 50s. It's the start of that.
Yeah, I think it was the first live action Disney movie.
I believe you're right. I believe it was. Yeah.
You know, just saying, well, before you go, sorry, Hunter, before you go, just as John said there, I believe you're right, that was very Alan Alda sounding. I just think of an old Alan Alda ism.
I believe you're right there.
Yes, exactly.
Sweet Liberty.
Dude, he's been missing from the show for years now, Alan Alda. Need to get your chops back up there, John.
Have to watch some Alan Alda stuff to get that back. So,
my wife's been watching MASH soon. She loves MASH. So, you know, I might be getting. I've actually met Alan Alda. So,
oh yeah. No,
yeah, really? Yeah. I worked on a movie that he was in back in the day. Yeah. Maybe we can do an episode on that in the future. Anyway, so. I'd give it an 8. I think it's a terrific adventure film, and I think it stands firmly alongside the Disney one, which is, you know, still one of my all-time favorite adventure movies, and I think it's worthy to be next to that one on anyone's shelf. So,
cool.
I think it's terrific. John, what about you?
I give it an 8, and I realized watching it this second time a few years later that the TNT primetime movies were kind of the then 90s equivalent of Disney's live action stuff for television in the 50s and early 60s. A lot of it is fantastic, and it was kind of that same strive for quality, even though it's almost like PG-13, soft R with the blood and violence and stuff. So
yeah. I was thinking about how if I have a son, which I definitely want, I would show him the Disney Treasure Island, but this would be the version I would show him when he was like 12, 13, you know,
yeah,
somewhere around there. It's a little more violent, but you know, it's not anything that I think a 12 or 13 year old couldn't handle.
Yeah, my son at age 9 watched this tonight. So,
okay, and he was like, "Oh, cool."
He liked it. I think he watched the Disney version a few years ago, but doesn't remember it. But I'm gonna check it out again.
My 12 year old watched Evil Dead 2 last night. True story.
And he was like, "Dad, I want to read Farewell to Arms."
No, he said, "Dad, I want to watch Ash vs. the Evil Dead now." So they just go in the garage and grab it. It's in there. Kids are freaking horror.
It's actually practically a 12-year-old boy's movie.
Oh my gosh! You know, Army of Darkness is, you know, a movie for
PG-13.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's a kid that. That movie, I was angry I didn't see it when I was younger, when I finally did see it.
Yeah.
I saw it when it came out and thoroughly enjoyed it. And still prefer the theatrical cut of it. I don't like the director's one.
Oh, I do too.
I prefer the theatrical cut.
The theatrical cut is the version I say people need to watch.
Absolutely. The director's adds nothing.
No, it has a lesser ending. The ending
that got around on the Korean videotape. Copies of that were getting around when Army of Darkness was in theaters.
Actually, it's funny. I saw the director's cut first the first time I saw it.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
No.
Well, my friend brought it over and we watched it, and he just, you know, bought it at the store, and it was the director's cut paper bag version, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking it was funny, and then I saw the theatrical cut, and I went, "Whoa, this ending's way better."
Yeah, for me, the series kind of ends.
You know what the problem was with the theatrical cut when it was finally announced it was coming out? All the fanboys were running around going, "More Ash! More Ash!" No.
Yeah,
it might be, but it's just 15 minutes extra you don't need.
No, yeah. I mean, there's like a love scene and stuff. It's just, it's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing that adds anything. The theatrical cut has the S-Mart ending, and the S-Mart ending is better than anything that's in the director's cut.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, plus it had Bridget Fonda. Plus the only problem with Bridget Fonda is her last name. That's about it.
Well, yeah. You know, nobody's perfect, you know.
Yeah, that's right. All right.
Right.
Let's go ahead and wrap it up.
Anything else you want to add, Stu, before we sign out?
No, it's stinking hot. I got some shit to do, so I'm all right.
I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
Yeah, and I'll say mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.